Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
And good afternoon and welcome to Iceman Insights with the Dirty D and starring webmaster, senior writer, IcemanManiacs.com, Michael Shockley. How you doing, Mike?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Ready and raring to go after 2 weeks off. Feels like it's been forever since we've done this show.
Yeah, I almost forgot how to operate the computer. But
did you ever really know in the first place?
Well, true. So it wasn't working with much. There wasn't a depth of knowledge that I could fall back
yeah,
on.
Yeah, we're one glitch away from renaming this show Technical Difficulties with Derek.
Oh, I like that. You can put that on my resume. It is good to be back. Had a couple of nice family trips. My dad got right knee replacement surgery done, so he's doing a lot better.
So is he now the bionic Bonini?
He is 66 years old, and he got it done so he can get back out on the pond and skate. So
well, you have
pretty
priorities.
Impressive. Oh, definitely, definitely. My mom is doing well too, as he's been trapped in the house for 2 weeks straight.
She hasn't killed him
yet. Yeah, yeah. So a lot of fun there, and of course. Boston Bruins Ottawa Senators game was postponed Monday night due to the bombings in Boston, and it's this world's a scary place. But hopefully we'll just get to spend some time here, just talking some hockey and having some fun and some nonsense, and just remember to love your family and love your friends and always be there to help, and that's all you can really do.
Yeah, and remember that the good always outweighs the bad. For every
Definitely.
For every one person who's trying to cause chaos, there's hundreds who will run toward the chaos to try to help. So yeah, we don't want to get too in depth about it. Just remember what happened, and we're going to move on and talk some hockey and have some fun. And yes, more nonsense than anything. That's
Indeed.
What we do.
Speaking of running in to help, breaking news over the break is that Rich Crom, coach, fired Jeff Pyle in. And interesting enough that Ron Gary had a relationship, business relationship with Jeff Pyle beforehand, and actually brought him into Iceman headquarters for 4 days to try to help out during the season as a consultant. So now Jeff Pyle is in, and he will be charged to get this team out of last place.
Yeah, the news broke last Thursday that well, the news really broke that they had hired Pyle, and then the last paragraph was, oh, by the way, he replaces Rich Crom. Crom leaves in three seasons. He had a record of 86, 94, and 24. Of course, obviously, two of those three seasons were expansion years, essentially. And on behalf of Aaron Miller and perhaps some others, I have to say, I'm surprised that you're here, because I thought your lips would still be chapped from frying them off of Crom's buttocks as he leaves town.
He won't return my calls.
I see. So, yeah, Jeff Pyle, the new Iceman head coach and director of hockey operations, which is essentially a new title for the GM role. When Crom was GM, he was more or less worried about the on-ice product, the hockey operations side, and the off-ice business side is left to other people. So it's kind of just redefining the role of what the coach does as far as signing players and whatnot. So he is the head coach and director of hockey operations. Pyle is 54 years old. He had a pretty lengthy career as a player in the minors here in North America and then also in Europe. He was a white-hot player, though, at one point. Over a four-year stretch in the original IHL, he had 442 points in 324 games.
Yeah, a couple of 40-goal seasons.
Yeah.
And this was the big-time IHL. This wasn't that six-team regenerated thing that they did in the late 90s and 2000s.
This was the legitimate IHL that
the Iron League.
Yeah, that was a lot of teams that were AAA affiliates. This was a good player. He was an IHL MVP one time. He was a seven-time All-Star. And then he retired as a player in 93, started coaching over in Europe, which is where he last played as a player. Then he came back to North America, started coaching for the Mobile Mystics in the ECHL, which eventually, after four seasons, moved to Gwinnett to become what is now the Gwinnett Gladiators. He ended up being in Mobile and Gwinnett for 12 seasons. Out of those 12, he had 9 playoff berths, a final record of 446, 323, and 91, and he did take them to the 2006 Kelly Cup Finals. After the 2010-11 season, he left Gwinnett, went to coach the Texas Stars in the AHL for one season, and then this past season, he was a consultant in the ECHL, primarily for Gwinnett, while he was dealing with some family issues, some health issues in his family. But as we've found out, he also did a little consulting work for Mr. Geary, which brings me to how they met in the first place. The ECHL owners meeting in September, at the very beginning of this past season, was in Atlanta, which obviously is the metro area where Gwinnett is. And Pyle was there doing consulting work for Gwinnett, and Geary was there, obviously, because he's the owner of the Icemen. And that's where they first met. At the time, Pyle inquired about a potential GM role, but Geary obviously had already committed to Rich Crum for this season and said, you know, we don't have a need for that. But they exchanged info and kept in touch, and the rest, as they say, is history. He was announced last Thursday as the new head coach. He will officially begin full-time on July 1st, but he is working part-time until then. It's just July 1 is basically the deadline he set for himself to be in town full-time as he works out family things and moves and all that stuff. But it's not like he's not doing anything until July 1st. He's already contacting players and agents and things like that. I asked him Thursday when the news broke. I was the first person that went to Ellis Park.
Oh, awesome.
They sent the press release out at like 12:30 and said at 1 o'clock, Pyle and Geary will be available at Ellis Park for questions from the media. Well, I have my my media credential from ProHockeyNews.com, so I went to Ellis Park awesome. At lunch. So I got there, and the Courier hadn't been there yet, and neither TV stations had been there yet, so I was the first person who got to talk to him. So met him a little bit, asked him what his feeling was about staff, as far as does he want to have his own people or is he open to keeping Patafi and Smoke and the people that are already in place. And he said he's not insistent on having his own people, he just wants good people, which probably means Patafi's screwed.
That was Michael Shockley's editorial here on WYIR 96.9, the Music Bomb.
That's just my way of seeing if Patafi ever listens to my segment.
Well, he does listen to your segment, but it's usually right around the 2 o'clock
yeah,
hour.
Yeah, it's right as he's driving in, yeah. So, yeah, I talked to him about that. I asked him about his style of coaching and what type of team he prefers. He said he likes an up-tempo style. He wants players that are hardworking, that are disciplined. He wants team first players. He's not a fan of defense first schemes like the trap, and he's not a fan of having two affiliates. So I think everything that he said about that is pretty much what Iceman fans want to hear. Of course, pretty much any new hire yeah. coach is going to say what fans want to hear. Yep. I'm pretty sure that Crum himself, when he was hired, said he liked an up-tempo yep. style.
Puck and possession, then, yeah. Detroit Red Wings right. style of hockey. That's
then,
what he said.
And then people,
regardless of whether Aaron Miller believes it or not, that's what he said.
I'm sorry, you're muffled a little bit. Are your lips still a little swollen?
No. Hey, I think Rich Crum's a great guy, a great coach. Hated to see him go. But I think Chris Phillips, the warden, said it best on Facebook, is that you love your Iceman family, but sometimes you have to remember that it still is a business.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sad to see Rich go. I thought he was fantastic. He was always decent to me. He was always decent to all those that I saw, whether he was hanging out and just talking or if he was talking hockey. And I still believe that he could have turned this team around. I think he would have had us in the playoffs this year. What I'm really interested to see is what tools does Jeff Pyle get that Rich Crum didn't get?
Right.
Now, does Pyle get an assistant coach because that was part of the consulting process? How is Coach Pyle going to put himself in a better position that Coach Crum didn't have?
Yeah, I don't necessarily expect a full-time assistant coach, but I wouldn't be surprised if he really seriously pushes to get a player assistant coach, whether it be Tatro or someone else, some sort of a veteran who comes back and kind of plays that dual role. We'll see what happens with that. I think I'm with you. I think if Crum had been afforded another year, things would have been completely different. I think just the expansion year and all the affiliation stuff and all of the injuries. Granted, you never want to finish last in the conference, but there were a host of reasons why you could see bringing him back. At the same time, I understand why the change was made.
Exactly, me too.
It's one of those cases where you'd really be fine either way. I would have preferred to keep Crum, but I totally get why he was sent back and Pyle has been brought in, because I think his resume speaks for itself. When you've been around this long, I heard somewhere he's like the third most winningest coach in the history of the ECHL. So the guy has been around the block. He knows the league. He knows the teams and the arenas and the referees and
the affiliates,
agents, and a million different things that he brings to the table that Crum did not, even with a year under his belt in this league. So I get it. I understand it. My impression was that Geary was not necessarily looking to replace Crum.
I wanted to bring that up, too.
I think it's that he met Pyle, and things just kind of developed from there, and it was almost as if this guy with all this experience kind of fell into his lap. And when things went south this past season, it was convenient to have, he's there, so why not use him? But I have this feeling, and Geary didn't say this to me. This is just my inkling, but I get the impression that if Ron Geary never met Jeff Pyle, Rich Crum would still be the coach of the Icemen. That's just my take on it. But
and I think someone put in the Maniac Asylum that this has probably been cooking for a long time because he was brought in as a consultant. But I didn't get that impression at all. I think Ron Geary had some, as the owner of the team, had some concerns about his team. And my guess would be more about expenses than it was about win-loss. Not that Ron Geary doesn't want to win, but I've worked for owners before, and the thing that gets owners' attention the quickest is profit margin.
Yeah.
and so I think he brought him in, and obviously he brought him in as a consultant, so Rich Crum knew about this, and he came into Evansville, so I'm sure they looked at things and looked at targeted areas of what could be fixed and everything else. But I don't think Ron Geary in December or January when Coach Pyle was in was thinking, okay, I'm just going to ride Crum out and then move to this guy. I think he let him handle the rest of the season and made a decision on what he wanted to do.
Right. I think it's going to be one of those questions where we can always look back and say, what if Crum was kept around? But no matter whether you like Crum or not, I saw somebody on the Iceman Facebook page when they made the announcement said, I'm canceling my season tickets. And I guess that's anyone's right.
Yep.
if you don't want to spend the money, you're welcome to not spend the money and take your money elsewhere. But I think that's an unnecessary knee-jerk reaction. If you are willing to take your money away from a team because a coach who coached a last-place team gets fired, then you got some weird priorities.
And you're going to burn through a lot of teams in your professional fan career.
I mean, we both are Crum apologists, and you've been accused of kissing his behind, but even the two of us understand why the move was made. We would have preferred to see him come back, but we understand
and support it 100%.
Yeah, exactly. So one thing I did want to mention, too, is when I met Pyle on Thursday, he made a great first impression. I really like the guy. He says all the right things, which is to be expected. This isn't his first rodeo. He knows what he's doing. So I would expect him to say all the right things. But he has a nice, easygoing demeanor to him. When I got to Ellis, he was actually talking to Patafi. And then after I talked to Pyle as I was leaving, I said, oh, by the way, don't believe anything Patafi tells you about me. And without missing a beat, he looked at me and said, so the thing about the monkey isn't true. So I was like, I like this guy. This guy's got a good sense of humor. So, I really liked meeting him. I only talked to him for 10, 15 minutes, but it was a good first impression on me. I like what he said about his style of play. Obviously, though, it's going to ultimately depend on his actions. Actions speak louder than words. My mom says that all the time, and that's very true in this case. You can say all the right things as a new coach, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's actually going to play out the way you say it's going to play out. And until the proof is in the pudding as far as winning games and the style of play that he says he's going to bring, the jury is out. So we'll see, but I'm cautiously optimistic that this is a good move for the Icemen, not necessarily that not making this move wouldn't have been okay as well.
Yep. I'm optimistic as well. You look at the 8 years in Gwinnett, 309 wins, 210 losses. Six of the 8 years he was in the playoffs, once in the finals. So he's got a great track record. The one thing that's interesting, if you go through the players that he had year by year, he never had a 40-goal scorer in the ECHL, but the teams that went very far, multiple 30-goal scorers and six 20-plus goal scorers on each one of the clubs. In the last 2 years when he failed to make the playoffs, he had a couple of guys with 20 goals, and then it went down from there. So no matter how good a coach is, you got to have talent on that hockey club. Okay. And even this guy who went to a finals, when those other guys graduated and moved away, couldn't hold them as veterans anymore. Mm-hmm. They moved off to the AHL or went over to Europe. He wasn't able to replace talent with talent, and he missed the playoffs.
It's so, like what we said with Crum, you can't win the race if you don't have the horses.
And so it's going to be nice, Ellis Park.
Yeah.
When do they open up? Is that your segue into advertising there? But
gamble responsibly, ladies and germs.
Yeah, just because we brought in a new coach does not mean we're in the playoffs.
Right.
That just did not happen, and he's going to have to dig deep and find a roster that of two 30-goal scorers,
right.
Six 20-goal scorers. And I guess the question is, of all those that we can protect, how many do you think? I'm sure he will protect players just out of because you can,
mm-hmm.
but how many does he really bring back, or is this whole team flushed?
I think there's going to be – we're definitely going to see more turnover than we would have if Crum was still the coach. I think if Crum was still the coach, even though the team finished in last, we probably would have seen somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 7 guys come back. But with the coaching change, I don't think that necessarily means we won't see any guys come back, but I think it will be fewer than 5 to 7. I think for any given player, the chances of returning are less likely, and in general, we may only see 2 to 4, if that. So it's going to be really interesting to see. It sounds like he's at least open to bringing guys back, and I'm sure he'll talk to Patafi and Smoke and others, and probably Terry Ficarelli too, and see what they think about the guys that should come back. I think if you ask most fans, most people are going to say Beaulieu, Tatro, Dale, Clark, and then there's a few others that would certainly be in the conversation. But I think those are probably the four no-brainers as far as fans are concerned, is Beaulieu, Clark, Dale, and Tatro. Now, whether or not he actually acts on that remains to be seen. We'll see. But, as great as his track record is, the fact that the last three seasons he's missed the playoffs is a little bit of a yellow flag. But I still think, as we've seen with players, sometimes all you need to rejuvenate yourself is a change of scenery.
Yep.
And I think he comes here and he has his contacts and he gets cooperation from affiliates and manages to keep a team relatively healthy. You could certainly see good things out of this team. So I'm sad to see Crum go, but I'm excited about the future.
The Icemen did a great job with that interview that they had with him and Ron Gary that they put up on the site.
Mm-hmm.
And
Ian Frazier, tap of the stick.
Was that him?
It was Ian Frazier, yes.
Awesome.
Tap of the stick to him. He's a loyal listener of this show. So
kid's fantastic. I've been trying to get him on the radio.
He's really
too good,
good
for us.
Yeah.
But a couple of things that stood out from that article was we need to get younger, and we need to do a better job of background checks as far as injuries go.
Yeah.
So you hear younger, and all of a sudden you think of Phil Plante, Mark Cody. I think those days may be done for those guys, unfortunately.
Well,
at least on this club.
I don't think Plante was going to come back anyway.
Okay.
I think if Crum was here, maybe we would have seen Cody come back in that role we've discussed, where he would be like a 10th forward utility kind of guy. But I think with Crum gone, that's not going to happen.
Nope.
I think he's either going to have to find somewhere else to play or just hang him up and hang out here in Evansville with his new bride.
And then I wonder about him talking about background checks and injury. You got Aaron Jens on a concussion. You got Matt Jens with a surgically repaired labrum. You have Beaulieu and the wrist injury.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see where he just severs ties with these guys because he has no relationship with them. And you can look at a video on a disc of what a player can do, but you don't know what they're like in the locker room.
Right.
And I'm not saying anything that they're bad in the locker room, but the coach doesn't have a relationship with them.
Right.
He just might just not want to even deal with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and that's where he may lean on Patafi and Ficarelli and the guys that are here and ask for their take, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's still going to act on it and say, all right, I take your word for it. I want this guy as part of my team. Because, yeah, as much as we like these guys, the injuries are a legitimate concern. Yep. Especially, to me, the biggest one is Aaron Jones with a concussion. Because concussions are so mysterious and you never know how they're going to behave. I think we have at least reasonable belief that Matt is going to be back to more or less himself once the rehab is completely done. But how that affects the way he plays, we don't know. Yep. And with Beaulieu, you just don't know as far as the severity of how bad the damage was and how quickly he can come back from it. So, yeah, with all three of those guys, if they're healthy, yeah, you'd probably bring them back. But because of the questions surrounding their health, you just don't know. And it puts a question mark next to their name that might not otherwise be there.
I think Dan Tatro is tough, too, and I hope he comes back. But that's a whole different situation where he's got leadership abilities, and he is the captain of this hockey club until he's replaced.
Right.
And I understand that Coach Pyle isn't necessarily beholden to any of his former players or anything like that. He just wants good people, and I'm sure Daniel Tatro is a good person. But that's a special relationship between mm-hmm. a coach and a captain.
Right.
And that could be a situation where Tatro may be too good of a leader to be in that role.
Right.
So that'll be an interesting interview process.
Because that could be a case of the old guard and the new coach.
Yep.
And you may just want to completely cut ties there and start fresh with either a captain, a leader who Pyle doesn't know, but we don't know either, or Pyle may want to bring in a guy that he's coached in the past that he knows he can count on, that is his guy. And that takes nothing away from Tatro. It's just, you have that dynamic. You're right. That dynamic between a coach and the captain is very important. And we saw Crom went to bat for Todd Robinson and carried yep. him around from place to place because of the relationship they had, for better or for worse. But that's part of why Crom brought Todd in when maybe other coaches wouldn't have, because he knew him and he was familiar with him. And that familiarity goes a long way. But on the topic of Pyle, you have to mention this little piece of trivia you told me before we came on the air about who he has coached.
He's coached a lot of interesting players. Last year in Houston.
Is it really Houston? I don't think.
Or
I think
it's Dallas?
Austin. I think the Texas Stars are in Austin.
Oh, I thought they were the Houston Stars.
No.
It's the Texan Stars.
The Texas Stars.
Texas Stars. But a couple of
Your pronunciation and geography is not optimum.
Oh, here we go. I'm just glad we don't have to talk about injuries. But Scott Glennie and Angelo Esposito, who was a long time ago first-round pick of the Pittsburgh Penguins, that was traded for Marian Hossa back when they had their two Stanley Cup runs. Pretty interesting. And if anyone's been watching the Dallas Stars, they were sellers at the NHL trade deadline, and they are right on the bubble of making the playoffs by the play of rookie Alex Chiasson and goaltender Richard Bachman, both of which Coach Pyle coached.
Is he from Bachman Turner Overdrive?
Yes, he is.
Ah, cool. Taking care of business.
96.9 music bomb. And then his ECHL history, two names that we will definitely recognize. Joe Grimaldi.
Who's in school, right?
Something like that. And Charlie Effinger, our former Gwinnett Gladiators. So
really?
Yep.
Yeah.
So, and then
current, not anymore, Fort Wayne Comet.
And then former Atlanta Braves pitcher, Cy Young Award winner, I'm guessing. I think he won one.
I'm pretty sure.
Tom Glavine played one game for Coach Glenn.
That's really cool.
Jeff Pyle.
I'm sure that was just one of those promotional one-night-only deals, but that's pretty cool that that they brought him in for a game and he was officially on the roster. That reminds me, when I was a kid, the Indianapolis Ice, back when they were still pro, for one game signed Manute Bol. The former basketball player who's like 7'8" or something crazy like that. And the whole point was they were signing him to a one-night contract so that he would become the tallest player in the history of hockey, so they would get in the Guinness Book of World Records. And he did it. He came out, and I don't even know if he took a shift, but he was actually on the roster for the game. So it was. There was a story. The Indianapolis Star did this big thing about how they had to like special order skates that would fit his ginormous feet, and it was quite the circus. But
who would you rather have, Manute Bol or Jordan Lane?
Ooh, Manute might be able to skate better. And anyone who wasn't around at Swander is going, who?
Yeah.
And everyone that was
is
wondering the same question.
Yeah, they're thinking in their head right now, going, that's a tough one.
So we're going to throw an audible in here.
Okay.
Now we're going to go to our best segment of every week because it's 3 minutes. Guaranteed that Shocker and I do not talk. Shockers, hockey, rock song of the week.
All right, this is in tribute to something that's coming up this Saturday, the 20th, at the Ford Center at 7 o'clock. It is the annual Guns N' Hoses Boxing Show. If you don't know what that is, where the heck have you been? It's the annual boxing card of Police Against Fire from around the tri-state. There are 15 bouts of 3 rounds each. All the proceeds go to 911 Gives Hope, which is the organization that the Icemen do the teddy bear toss for. Tickets are $15 to $30. It is a great show. They do a fantastic job with it. It's very professionally done with music and lights and everything, and it feels like you're at a big-time boxing event, and it's all for a great cause. So if you're not doing anything Saturday night, think about going out to the Ford Center, Guns N' Hoses. Because of Guns N' Hoses being a boxing show, the song of the week this week is a song that I used to use as a rally song late in games at Swander, and it occasionally would lead to Preston Rue putting his hood over his head and running the steps, which I always enjoyed. This is composed by a man named Bill Conti, although he did not actually sing the lyrics in it. It is from the 1977 film Rocky, if you've ever heard of it. Gonna Fly Now. And we're back here on 96.9 WYIR, the music bomb. Iceman Insight, starring Michael Shockley and myself, the Dirty D. And I guess we can finish up the 2013 season. Yeah, I want to kind of wrap things up a little bit, just since there were a few games left in the season after our last show. The Icemen did finish the season 2-0-1 in the final week, including a 4-0 shutout win in Cincinnati in the season finale. In that game, Jason Dale had a hat trick.
Jason Dale
had a hat trick. And James Reed and Kevin Moore shared a shutout. And I want to mention that. James Reed, that's really cool. We had talked about whether or not Crom would put Kevin Moore in for a little time. And the fact that Reed was not just winning the game, but he was on his way to his first career professional shutout, which not only is that a cool thing, but when you're fighting to get a job in the next season, having a shutout on your resume looks really good. And when you willingly step aside to let a guy play the last 3 minutes of the game just so he can get some action in the spotlight, that speaks volumes about the kind of guy that James Reed is. And that's, I thought that was really cool. So major stick tap to him, because he could have just said, no, I'm staying in. I love you, man, but I need to get this shutout for me. And he didn't. He came out and let Moore play. And it goes down as a shared shutout. So in Reed's individual stats, he does not have a shutout, even though he played 56 minutes and change in that game. So big tap of the stick to him. He actually finished the season really well. I went back and compiled his stats, and in his first 2 weeks, he played six games. And that was kind of when he was shaking off the rust. It was almost like his training camp coming back from injury. He had a .462 goals against and an .873 save percentage, which is not very good.
Nope.
But in his last 2 weeks, also in six games, his goals against dropped to .299 and his save percentage went up to .909. And that was playing with a team that was largely a bunch of rookies in front of him.
Yep.
The Iceman had 16 players on the roster or in the lineup for the finale, and out of those 16, there were 12 rookies and no veterans. So that's the kind of team he was playing behind, and yet his numbers got that good down the stretch. So kudos to him for letting Moore come in and also for shaking off the rust and proving himself to be worthy at the end of the season. It will be interesting to see if he gets a job somewhere next year. I don't know if it'll be here, but I think he proved himself that he's a kind of guy that can play at this level. So good for him. Also, Jason Dale.
Jason Dale.
He was the only non-rookie who appeared in both the season opener and the season finale for the Iceman. That kind of tells you how things went this year. Anyway, the team finished 25-40-7.
Jeez, half the team didn't even that started on the opening day roster didn't even finish in the same league.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, very much so. I compiled that, and I don't have it in our notes, but I remember out of the 59 players who started who played at some point for the Iceman this season, 59 of them, 30 ended the season either with another team or in another league. So more than half.
Yep.
That's insane. Anyway, we finished 25-40-7, which was last in the East, but we did stay ahead of Bakersfield, who finished 22-44-6.
It's not even worth mentioning.
And the final total was 425 man games lost to injury, so nearly six per game on average. Like I said, 59 different players played, which is compared to 51 in both CHL seasons combined. And this was, I thought this might have been more telling than anything. I went back and I checked all the box scores. In 72 games, the Iceman used 60 different game night lineups. I'm not talking about line combinations. I'm talking about full lineups. So that's incredible. And out of the 60, no single lineup was used for more than three straight games. We only had a full 18-man lineup 40 times. We were one man short 16 times, two men short 12 times, and three men short 4 times. Not a single player played all 72 games.
Jason Dale
had the most games with 70. The two games he missed was as a healthy scratch back when we had too many forwards.
You know Jason Dale has a pretty serious big-time girlfriend?
I'm sorry, what's his name?
Jason Dale.
Does he really?
Yeah. I hung out with him before the guys left town.
Really?
And, yep, he's got a sweetheart up in the big Toronto. Oh. We talked a lot of Leaf hockey. It was awesome. It was a fantastic day.
But that's breaking news. Jason Dale has a girlfriend.
Yes.
Oh, you're hearing hearts break around the tri-state.
I can't wait to hear all the crap on Maniac's Asylum. He doesn't deserve to come back.
Yeah, screw him. We don't want him anymore. Yeah, so out of all the players the Iceman had, only 8 played more than half of the team's games, while 16 played fewer than 10. It's just amazing all the different ways you can see how crazy this season was. No goalie made more than 25 appearances. There were 8 different goaltending tandems. Karpowicz and Madore made the most appearances together, and that was a whopping 20 games together. Karpovich and Dayton made 18 appearances together. And another sign of things. In the 18 games that Karpovich and Dayton were both the two goalies on the roster, they played with 18 different lineups. We ended up with...
And this is why I'm a big Rich Crom fan.
So we ended up with four different captains. Todd Robinson played 57 games with the C. Matt Jens had 8 while he was filling in for Todd when he was hurt. Tatro wore the C for 4 games before he got called up at the end of the season. And Jake Obermeyer was the captain for the last 3 games of the season. 7 different players wore an A as an alternate captain. Matt Jens, Tatro, Obermeyer, Phil Plant, Josh Beaulieu,
Jason Dale,
and Dylan Clark. As far as affiliations go, we ended up with 34 call-ups involving 19 different players. The Blues Riverman side, that was where most of the problem was. There were 23 recalls just on the Blues and Riverman players. The Blue Jackets and Springfield side, there were 11 recalls.
Yeah, but they never came back.
Yeah, that's true. Most of them did not come back. The St. Louis and Peoria guys kept going back and forth. I think there were 3 different guys who ended the season with 4 call-ups each.
What was that trophy?
The Dave's Taxi Award.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah. So, that was... that's just scratching the surface of the affiliations. If you go to IcemanManiacs.com, I've got a 3-part season review story up about all different assets. Aspects.
Did you say ass?
I said assets.
Okay.
Aspects. That was not optimum pronunciation. But there's all kinds of stuff on there about the way the affiliate players played and comparing their stats to the Iceman contracted players, which, interestingly, the Iceman contracted players actually scored more per game played than the affiliate players did, which might surprise some people. There's also some stuff about attendance and a bunch of other things, but if it's a 3-part series, I'm really proud of it, so if you want to kind of get your last dose of this past abysmal season, you can read the 3-part recap. But one last thing on that is the attendance. The Icemen did finish with an average of 5,415 fans, which was 7th out of 23 ECHL teams, despite being the 5th smallest market in the league. So that's very good. It was up 11% from last year when we averaged 4,882. Elsewhere in Indiana, the Comets fell 2% from 7,770 to 7,583. But they were still first in the league, although they were not going into their final home game. They were in need of a large crowd in order to pass Ontario, who finished 2nd, and they did get a big enough crowd to do it. But and then within Evansville, for the first time, pretty cool news, the Icemen actually outdrew the UE basketball team. The Icemen, like I said, averaged 54-15. UE drew 45-88 per game this year. On Saturdays, the margin was even bigger. We outdrew them 71-64 to 57-71. Of course, the Aces took a bit of a hit this year because they did not have home games against Butler and IU, which were marquee draws last year. But I think we had like 7 or 8 crowds that were bigger than their biggest crowd this year. So pretty cool to see that we've come that far to where we're officially the number one game in town now, average and total number of people. So pretty neat.
So after that breakdown of everything that was horrendously wrong with this season, speculation time, because that's what we do. At least that's what I do.
I usually show
up to be very wrong. But what do you think doomed Crom for the season?
Well, I think injuries is definitely part of it. I think when you lose over 400 man games.
I guess, though,
what was it?
I don't
control?
Think Ron Gary's. sacked him because of injuries.
Well,
what do you think? What did Ron Gary see that he thought he was no longer going to give Rich Crom control of this hockey club?
If I had to say anything, it would probably my first guess would probably be the reliance on Robinson. I think bringing him back as captain, and apparently there was some issues in the locker room when Jason Dale was on Iceman Live, the first one after the season ended. Somebody asked him if he thought things would have been different, if the team would have been better had there been a change in leadership earlier in the season. And without hesitation, he said 100%.
Wow.
So maybe the word that the other players were not happy about Robinson as captain and Crom's reliance on him got back to Geary, and maybe he kind of got the thinking that Crom had lost the room to some extent. I don't know. Obviously, that's total speculation and conjecture.
Oh, we love it.
Yeah. But I would think that's probably part of it. I also think just all the dealings with affiliations and through no fault of his own, all the nonsense of players coming back and forth and back and forth and back and forth with the affiliations, especially on the St. Louis side, having two affiliates and all the issues that came with that, and just not knowing how to handle that because he's never had to do it before. I think when you compare Crom to a guy like Pyle who's been down that road, obviously that makes Pyle seem a little more attractive as an option.
I think, yeah, number one, I think it was the affiliates and just that whole entire fiasco. And again, there is nothing that Crom could do to control how many injuries we had on our club. There is also nothing he could do because of the NHL lockout. But once all that stuff was over, the NHL lockout was over, it was just, and that was a nightmare. And I think there was a lot of expenses in it, too, that that doomed him. Now, here's my second question for you. Ooh. Does Rich Crom get a job in the ECHL? And do you think our Iceman team will end up playing against a Rich Crom-coached ECHL club?
I wouldn't say that he'll never coach in the ECHL, but my guess is he won't now. I think he will get a job somewhere. He may go back to juniors. He may go back to the CHL. He may even drop down to the SPHL. It just depends on how many offers he gets and who wants him. But I think he's got enough of a track record that he's not going to be unemployed for long. But I don't think it's going to be in the ECHL, at least not next season. Because I think when you finish last place, you kind of off the radar. You almost have to take a step back down, reestablish your footing, and then start walking back up the ladder. So I wouldn't rule it out down the line, but I don't think we're going to see that next season.
I wouldn't be surprised if he got a job this coming year. I think he's got a good enough track record in the IHL and last year in the CHL, and having the NHL pedigree that he has and who he knows, and to be able to walk into any ECHL owner's office and say, these are the mistakes that I made in Evansville last year with the affiliates, with this, with that, and this is how I would change things differently. I think you give him 3 hours with any owner, I think he might have a job. And I wonder about with the New York connection that he has, Trenton, New Jersey. They did not have pretty much a banner year, I don't think. So you wonder, will he end up somewhere? And I would love to see it because I still think he's a fantastic coach.
It's quite possible. And you never know, he could resurface in Michigan. Kalamazoo missed the playoffs this year, too.
Ah, yeah.
That's another option. I think you're right in that if he gets a meeting with an owner who's looking for a coach, he could certainly win him over. Between his track record and sitting down in front of someone and saying, yeah, things didn't go well, but here's what I learned, I think he could certainly win someone over and get himself a job. The question in my mind is, will he get the opportunity to sit down and talk to an ECHL owner, or will they just look at the record from this season and go, I don't think so. I don't know. We'll see. I think
there's got to be a lot of owners out there and or general managers that when that press release went out that said Rich Crom has been fired, I think people in the hockey world perked up.
Probably so, yeah. I think so. I think, like I said, I don't know that it'll be in the ECHL, but I think he will definitely be coaching somewhere. That he has too much success under his belt to be unemployed in 2 months. In fact, who knows? Maybe by the time we do our next show, he may have a job somewhere.
That would really be good.
Yeah. So we'll see. But it's going to be interesting. And it would be kind of cool if he does get a job in the E eventually to see the response the fans would give him the mm-hmm. first time he comes back to town. I think it would generally be pretty positive. I think most people, even those who understand why he's gone, will miss him in some way, shape, or form. You know, there may be people that don't like the style of how he coached. They may not like the way things went with Todd Robinson. But I think most people who had any interaction with him in any way liked him as a man. And I think that would be enough that if he ever does come back as a visiting coach, he'll be met with respect and perhaps some applause.
I wonder, too, how much
he lost his job because of unrealistic expectations. I predicted this team bottom third. They fulfilled it perfectly.
they were bottom 23rd. Yeah.
And even went above and beyond. Or
12th.
and I had heard rumors of some high expectations within the headquarters with the staff. And sometimes we talk about the captain going down with the ship, and you lose your job when you're a part of something that got the wheels fall off.
For sure. After it all came out, I sent him an email and said, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to work with you as far as doing the stats and stuff that I've been doing with him, and said, you know, it's sad to see you go, and good luck in the future. And he replied and said, you know, he thanked me for everything that I'd done for him and said, you know, it's just a matter of we didn't win enough. I wish we could have won more. And ultimately, that's the name of the game, especially in a market that's relatively new still. You cannot sustain losing and keep your fan base.
No. Nope.
And
we're not Toronto.
No, not at all. So
Thank goodness.
Yeah. So I get it. I understand why Geary wanted to pull the trigger and make a change. I do think that things would have been better even if Crum was still the coach, but I understand it. And I think Crum will land on his feet too.
Postseason update.
Yeah, I want to take a quick look around the postseason in both the ECHL and the CHL, starting with the latter. The CHL is now in their semifinals. The top-ranked Allen Americans, featuring Todd Robinson and Jim McKenzie, are facing the fifth-seed Missouri Mavericks, featuring Jesse Perrin. In the other matchup, the Wichita Thunder, who are the number two seed, don't have any Icemen. They are facing the number three Fort Worth Brahmas, who feature Jared Lavender and Nick Schneider. So there's a lot of Icemen over in the CHL playoffs, and unless
Schneider,
yeah.
Huh?
So unless the Wichita Thunder end up winning it, someone who has played for the Icemen is going to hoist a trophy in I don't know, a month or so, give or take. Wichita actually advanced to the semis with a first round sweep of the Arizona Sun Dogs, featuring Mario LaRocque and Kevin Kenny R2D2 Baker.
Now, did Bisek ever make it down there after all that craziness?
I think they ended up waiving him. I don't know if he didn't report or what, but he may have played a game or two, but he's not on their roster now. So yeah, for those of you keeping track at home, Kevin Baker has as many playoff wins this season as the Icemen, and his season lasted exactly four more days than the Icemen season
did.
So, yeah, that chance to play for longer didn't really pan out very well for him. So, yeah, that's where things went for him. He did play well for them, though. He had 14 points in 10 regular season games after he joined them. But he was scoreless in the playoffs, so, yeah, that didn't end very well for him. Elsewhere, Todd Robinson has 7 points and is plus three in 7 playoff games so far. He also had 7 points in 5 games in the regular season after he went to Allen. So Todd's working out pretty well. Baker, not so much. Although, I guess the Sun Dogs liked what they saw out of Baker in the regular season because they have already signed him for next season.
Hmm.
They sent out a press release a couple days after they were eliminated from the playoffs, saying that Kevin Baker has been re-signed for the 13-14 season. So we know where he'll be playing, at least for the start of next season, until things go south and he jumps and goes somewhere else. Meanwhile, in the ECHL, the first round is almost over as of when we record this. If you've been sneezing a lot lately, it's because there's a lot of chalk flying around. Out in the West, the Alaska Aces beat the San Francisco Bulls 4-1. The surprise there is that San Francisco even won a game. Ontario swept Utah. Idaho beat Colorado 4-2. And Stockton beat Las Vegas 4-3. So that was 7 games. And all 7 games in that series were won by the home team.
There's home ice advantage right there.
Yeah, no kidding. In the East, Reading beat Greenville 4-1. And all 4 Reading wins were via shutout. Yeah. Gwinnett swept South Carolina. Florida beat Elmira 4-2. And as of when we record this, Cincinnati leads Toledo 3-2. Game 6 is, or was, by the time this airs, Tuesday night. And Game 7, if necessary, is tonight, Wednesday.
Dude, you should have just predicted it. You should have just said,
yeah,
Cincinnati beat Toledo Tuesday night. And then looked brilliant.
Yeah. That series, the Cyclones actually jumped out to a 3-0 lead, and then Toledo's starting to come back. So.
And former Maple Leaf defenseman, or I think he was a forward for them, Phil Oreskovich, guaranteed the victory prior to the game.
Wow.
And they staved off elimination and now have made it 3-2.
I'm just surprised the Cyclones are even playing since their coach threatened to withdraw them from the playoffs.
That's a beauty, man. I told you off air that I had someone come up and tell me that, and I just laughed at him. I said, dude, that was an April Fool's Day joke.
Yeah.
And they tried to play cool. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I knew that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do the April Fool's thing every year, and this one really got some people. Yep. I had to nip it in the bud after about 3 hours because it was gaining steam like crazy. In this era of social media, the story spreads like wildfire, and then I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to get a nasty email from the league or something wondering, what the heck are you doing? Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that was just an April Fool's gag, people. Ryan Huff really took it hook, line, and sinker. He was spreading the word to anyone who would listen.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
There goes his media credentials. All right. Iceman trivia.
Iceman trivia, you are now 5-10.
I'm happy with that.
You got the last one correct. This one I went through and compiled some stats, as I do at the end of every season. And this is pertaining to the fisticuffs. My question for you, which one of the following four Iceman players did not get a fighting major this season? Your choices are Anton Blomqvist, Josh Beaulieu, Dylan Clark, and Jason Dale.
Jason Dale!
Yes.
Well, I've got it narrowed down to two, Anton Blomqvist and Dylan Clark. I think the other two, I do remember them having fighting majors. So, to break the tie, and I've been well-schooled by Don Cherry, I'm going to pick the sissy foreigner to have gotten into a fight, so I'm going to pick Anton Blomqvist.
Dang it! Believe it or not, out of those four, Blomqvist had the most fights.
Really?
He actually fought twice. One on the road at Fort Wayne, and then one at home against Elmira.
That kind of shows how tough I thought he was from shift to shift.
Well, I don't know about the one on the road at Fort Wayne, but the one at home against Elmira was one of those deals where he hit somebody questionably and then somebody came up to him and forced him to fight.
Got it.
But yeah, he had two fighting majors. Dylan Clark had one. He fought Fort Wayne's Tyler Butler. And Jason Dale had one. He fought Toledo's Cody Lample. The answer is Josh Beaulieu.
Wow. Now, he did have the game misconduct for that elbow at the end of the one game.
Yeah, he had some misconducts, but he did not get a single fighting major all season.
Fooled
which, given the way he plays and the way he's fought in the past, is kind of surprising.
Yep. He was.
That was a tricky one.
That was.
But out of the 72 games the Iceman played, there were 39 fighting majors. Mark Cody led the team with just 7. With all the moves and stuff, there weren't that many guys that were here and played enough games to get in a bunch of fights.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
How many games did Mark Cody play?
Like 24. Yeah, he had 7 fights, including 2 in the same game against Fort Wayne. Second on the team, and this would probably surprise you too, Dan Tatro with 5 fights. Matt Krug was next with 4, and then Aaron Jens and Cody Beach had 3 each. By team, the Comets were the most fought team. There were 13 fights against them, 9 against Cincinnati, 5 against Toledo. And even though we played them 12 times as another division rival, there was only 1 fight all season against Kalamazoo.
Hmm.
That's a pretty finesse team. They didn't play super physical. And we didn't. It seemed like the games against Kalamazoo were spread out. So there wasn't a whole lot of bad blood carrying over from one game to the next.
Not like Thursday, Sunday against Cincy and things like that.
So, yeah, that's 39 majors. Cody fought the most. Tatro second. Fort Wayne. And, yeah, the sissy foreigner fought more than Clark and Dale and Beaulieu.
Yeah. He's still not coming back next year. No. Brian Patafi, tweet of the week. Oh, my gosh.
This is a good one. As we've mentioned before, you can always follow Iceman Athletic Trainer and weekly amusement park guest Brian Patafi on Twitter. His handle is bpatafi. That's B-P-A-T-A-F-I-E. And this one, this has nothing to do with hockey, but it's funny. He said, quote, "A man who goes to bed with an itchy bum wakes up with a smelly finger," end quote.
That's unbelievable.
That joke is so old, it's probably got dust on it, but I enjoyed it. And speaking of Patafi, in case you missed it, on the last episode of the amusement park on March 27th, for those who did not get to hear it, Patafi mentioned something that I thought was really interesting. And he said that in kind of as a response to Todd Robinson leaving, that Tatro is easing off on retiring and does want to come back next season. And he was actually offered a deal with a CHL playoff team at the end of the season after Todd left, and he declined. So I thought that said a lot about the type of guy that Tatro is, and that he was here for the long haul, and he wanted to stay even though there was really nothing left to play for. And his loyalty ended up being rewarded with a call-up to Peoria, and he's still there.
Yeah, still might play a little right wing the other
night. Yeah, they were short on forward, so defenseman playing wing. Same story in a different city.
Yep.
But, yeah, I thought that was really cool. That's that says a lot about the type of guy that he is and the type of leader he is, and that's why we want a guy like him back.
There is also Patafi mentioned, too, that he has a contact with one of the guys in Peoria, a former business relationship, and the guy said, "You got to tell me about this Tatro guy that you sent us." And Brian said, "What do you want to know? He's in your locker room." He said, "Yeah, but it was – when he walked in, it was like Wayne Gretzky came in. The whole room lightened up, and all these guys were like, hey, Tets, and really excited that he was there." And that's the kind of impact this guy had on a lot of players that have, you know, the Anthony Nigros and the rest that have been called back up to Peoria. And
some of them weren't even here for very long, but they had a very positive impression of him just from their time here. So, yeah, that was a good story.
So it's nice when karma works out like that. You got a Kenny Baker that gets booted out of the playoffs, and you got a Dan Tatro that's still playing, and he's playing on the AHL dime. That's pretty nice.
Very true. One other thing I did want to mention, too, Todd Robinson's minus 35 did end up being the worst among all 985 skaters who played in the ECHL this season.
I think my minus 22 was worse than the 33 guys that played in the Spa-Aha this men's league year as well, for those of you that are keeping my stats at home.
Well, you know, though, about plus minus, and we've talked about how it can be deceiving at times and doesn't tell the entire picture, and you have to look at other stats too. When I was looking at Tatro's track record, it's probably 4 or 5 years ago, but he had a season, he had a minus 43.
Nice.
And we all love Tatro.
Yeah.
So it tells you that the plus minus taken in a vacuum is not always indicative of the way a player plays. Because, I mean, Tatro was, I think, minus 15 this year for us on a bad team. And minus 15 obviously is not good. But
this team, it wasn't bad.
This team, yeah, it was about average. But when you look at him play, you can't imagine how he would ever be minus 43 on any team, no matter how bad they are. I mean, if he was only minus 15 on this team, how bad was the team he was minus 43 on?
So, and you don't know, too, was that a big development moment in his career? Was he obviously has offensive skill, so was he mainly an offensive defenseman? And then after a minus 43 season, he thought, geez, if I'm going to extend my pro career, I need to be a little bit more
responsible
in my defensive end, exactly. Right. So you don't know, but it's all part of development.
Mm-hmm.
Final thoughts. 2 weeks, next show, May 1st.
Yes, we're taking next week off. We'll be back on May 1st. Beyond that, we haven't figured it out quite yet, but we'll let you know. But yeah, show up in 2 weeks and listen. And whenever we do sort out the schedule, I will always have it posted on IcemanManiacs.com. If you click over to where the podcast archive is, at the bottom of the list of downloads, I will put the next few dates up as soon as they are determined. But yeah, May 1st will be our next show. And on that show, we're going to talk a little bit about silly season, all the team-oriented issues of affiliations and teams possibly moving and the Peoria Rivermen being bought out. There's a tease.
Yeah.
we're also going to take a look around the ECHL and maybe jot down a few players that catch our eye that the Icemen might target for next season. And with Jeff Pyle being the new coach, there might be a few more spots open for new guys and fewer spots open for returnees. So who knows? It'll be interesting to see if we can each come up with like 5 guys that we would target and see if any of them do end up here.
I like that. That'd That's be a fun cool. game.
Yeah. And then we'll both be completely off base.
You might be. Well, but you'll probably be right because you'll have 27 conditions to go with your five players. So
I resemble that remark.
So
that's all I got.
But that'll be next week. Thank you very much for listening.
2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, 2 weeks. Jeez, that'll be our next show.
Etch-a-Sketch brain already forgot.
I'm shaking it. I love that commercial with the kid that says he can rub his stomach and move his head at the same time.
That's a really funny ad campaign. Yes. Did you see the one where he's sitting there with all the basketball stars?
Uh-uh.
And he's high-fiving Larry Bird and Magic Johnson and they one by one make him stand up. They're sitting, and he has to stand up to give them a high five because they're so tall.
Nope, I didn't see that one.
It's pretty good.
But that's it. Thank you very much for listening on the... Gosh, what's this show even called?
the Amusement Park Iceman Insights.
Iceman Insights on the Amusement Park on 96.9 WYIR, the music bomb.
We'll see you on the radio.
The puck is in. The home team wins the good old hockey game.